The Green Sun Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit CEATECHN.com to learn more.
One or two? Do you see better with one, glasses, or two, LASIK surgery? I trust my eyes to the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center, located in Valparaiso, Indiana. The state-of-the-art office and surgery center is the best in the region, providing complete eye care, including exams, glasses, and eye surgery. To make an appointment, call 219-464-8223. That's 219-464-8223. Or visit their website, nwindianaeyeandlaser.com. Trust your eye care to the best. And we thank the Northwest Indiana Eye and Laser Center for their support. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is GreenSense, where we bring you eco-innovations that are changing your world. Norway has set the global bar for EV use, as they are quickly reaching their target goal to have all new cars be zero-emission vehicles by 2025 and new trucks by 2030. What lessons can the U.S. learn from Norway to make the transition to EVs more smoothly? I only know one person that has the breadth of transportation knowledge to help us dig into this issue. So I contacted our good friend, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and the host of the Car Stuff podcast, to join us now. Tom, welcome back to Green Sense.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
But we've never done this before, so this should be fun to do a case study on another country. Are you up for the challenge?
I am. Yeah, I love this story, actually.
Well, I do too. And EVs have gotten lambasted, so I thought it would be good to look at someone who's doing it right, see if there's something we can learn. So let's get into it and explore how Norway achieved such a high EV use and see what ideas we can transfer back here to the U.S. So let's start out by putting our discussion into context and talk about some background information comparing the U.S. to Norway. As we have our lessons learned, we'll have to put that into context because these are very different countries. So last summer, I had the pleasure to check off something on my bucket list. My wife and I visited Norway. What a beautiful, wealthy Northern European country. It's hilled with high plateaus, rugged mountains, fertile valleys, and a spectacular coastline with fjords. And as you go up further north, there's Arctic tundra, and there's 50,000 islands off its coastline. It can also be a very snowy and cold place in the winter months, especially in the northern parts of the country near and in the Arctic Circle. Have you been there, Tom?
I haven't. My daughter got close. She studied in Finland, but I've never been out that way.
Well, I suggest you put that on your bucket list. It's just a wonderful place. And we had the opportunity to rent an electric car, but since we were driving out into the fjords, I was nervous about the charging stations and if they had adequate infrastructure, because we were going to be in remote areas. And to my surprise, it was not a problem, and hence why I thought we'd do a story on this. So let's get into the facts. Let's talk about the area. Norway is 385,000 square kilometers. It's slightly larger than the state of New Mexico. What is the area of the U.S.?
A little bit bigger. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the U.S. obviously solidly larger, and as we know, almost as large as the USSR. So we're talking about a much greater landmass.
Yeah, I've got a number of 9.5 million squared kilometers, which is, like 20 times bigger. The population of Norway is 5.5 million. What's the population of the U.S.?
335 million and growing. I think we're actually due for a population check because I think we're even bigger now.
So that, I don't even know, what is that? Maybe a percent of what the U.S. is? So it's a very small populated country. And the government of Norway is a parliamentary constitutional monarchy. Basically, they got a king. So I'm not sure what form of government the U.S. has these days. So Norway is a very wealthy country. In part, it's due to the large oil reserves, and I think this is going to be an important point. They also have a rainy day fund currently at $1.5 trillion. That's what they have tucked away in the reserve. Does the US have a rainy day fund?
I don't think that we maintain much cash. And as you've noted in conversations we've had offline, we simply create money by issuing bonds. So we do this differently. I guess we don't worry that much here in the US about running out of money, but we probably should worry a little.
Yeah, I think we just print money and increase our debt. But the reason this is important is that one of the bigger industries in Norway is oil and gas. And I think it's funny that an oil and gas predominantly driven country is switching to renewable energy and electric vehicles. So we'll come back to that point. Do you know how much of the electricity is produced in Norway, and how does it compare to the US?
Yeah, they are extremely fortunate in that they are almost 100% renewable over there, and a lot of it is hydro, which is fantastic that they have that opportunity. And obviously, that's geographically specific. So it's just the good fortune of being where they're at.
And do you know what the US electricity generation by energy source is?
Yeah, we are currently at and 40% natural gas, so that's relatively clean. 20% coal, which isn't clean at all, 20% nuclear, and then 20% renewables. And
Yeah, that's quite a mix.
it's quite a mix. It's not as depressing as it could be, but that coal is still a big problem.
Yes, and I think it's getting better over time. Now, here is a big issue, and I know it's taxes. And when we get into taxes, it's very complicated because there's lots of different scales based on how much you earn. But to get sort of a baseline minimum, and I looked at the Tax Foundation website. That the tax for a single worker with no children earning on a national average wage is 36% for Norway. Do you know what that is for the US?
Oh, it's about 28% here in the US. And that 36% is interesting, but it seems like most of the population there accepts that the services they get are worth what they're paying for them.
Yeah, and the things they get is good health care, inexpensive education. When I was out there, I could not believe how well the roads are maintained. The infrastructure is incredible. The cities are clean. The air is clean. And they have a very low budget for military. So there's big differences there. And you hear a lot about Northern European countries being highly taxed. But I think we're sort of nickel and dimed here in the States. We might pay a small income tax, but we've got lots of layers of taxes there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sure, our income tax is lower, but what we pay for gasoline, for example, gasoline is highly taxed. And when you get to the end of it, something like 40, 50, 60%, depending on where you live, of the cost of gasoline is taxed. So you can just add that in. We are nickeled and dimed, literally, Robert.
So let's get into it now, the facts of the show, and talk about why Norway sets the bar so high for EVs. First of all, how does Norway define a zero emission vehicle, and what types of vehicles does this include?
And generally, it's zero emission is zero emission to those guys. And one of the things that's included is there's electric, so pure EV, and fuel cell vehicles as well. Fuel cell vehicles are very clean. The only thing that they emit is water. One of the problems with fuel cells is that they're very expensive and they're not broadly applied, and there is no real infrastructure in the in Norway to support them.
So let's get into it. How did the government change consumer behavior to get them to go from ICE internal combustion engines to such a high percentage of EVs? And I've got a number of categories here. I thought we'd first start out with policy. What were the policy goals? And if you could talk a little bit how they did that through policy and what their goals were.
Yeah, their ultimate goal is for the company, I'm sorry, the country to convert to 100% EVs. And I think they were trying to do that a little bit faster than actually happened, but they're now at 80% of new vehicle purchases. So they've gotten where they wanted to be. And their policy was in for the motor pool for the Norway fleet to be clean, and they got there. Their incentives were interesting because they added up over time, increasing those incentives. In the US, we have a very strange policy where we're offering an incentive right now on certain vehicles at certain times, and it's difficult to apply for. But in Europe, you pay the VAT, the value-added tax on every vehicle, not just vehicles, but anything you purchase. They've made the VAT disappear, which is a huge incentive. That's 25% on most vehicles. So that's like $15,000 probably on your average EV, a very large incentive.
And for Europeans, they all feel like they're taxed very heavily, and they are, especially in northern European countries. To eliminate taxes is news to a European, is news to their ears. So that was a good way to change behavior. The other thing I thought was very interesting was that their policy goal was not to force people to drive EVs, but it was to eliminate emissions, to get to zero emission levels. And the EVs and the hydrogen fuel cell cars were a way to get there. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, and you raise an interesting point. They have a carbon tax in Europe, in Western Europe, and the carbon tax is in fact one of the incentives. If you go EV, you don't pay the carbon tax anymore. And this is a little bit how Europe used to incentivize diesel fuel too. They simply did not tax diesel fuel the way they did gasoline. And for years and years and years, that worked very well, and it did reduce carbon emissions. But yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's sort of a negative. A negative incentive, but it works so well.
Yeah, I look at it as a carrot and a stick. They reward you for doing the behavior they want, and you're punished by having to pay extra money. And people pay a lot of attention when they have to pay extra money. The other thing I thought was interesting policy-wise was they did not have policy that was set up to eliminate ICE vehicles. It was to really promote electric vehicles. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that's a great point because here in the US, people have responded very badly to especially California, stating policy plans to eliminate electric vehicles by 2035, for example. And everyone's freaking out about that here in the US because these are things they like. The color here is very negative. It feels as if the government is taking away something people want, as opposed to promoting something that's very good for everyone. And I think that Norway is handling it so much better. I don't know if they hired PR people, but it just works better.
Yeah, it was a more gentler way that government got into your life rather than this intrusive force to make you not do things. You touched on incentives. Talk a little bit about the economics, if you have them, on the cost of an EV versus an ICE to purchase and to operate now with all these incentives.
Yeah, the interesting thing too, it is, and in Norway, to some extent, they have regulated how much you can be charged for electricity. And it's a little bit more of a Wild West situation here in the US, where some of the third party charging companies can be a little expensive. I don't think it's highway robbery, it's not usury, but it's more money than you might expect. And so much money in some cases that you're not really saving money on gasoline. And in Norway, they're already dealing with expensive gasoline.
So the economics definitely is driving you towards electric cars, but there's also some little perks that you got in Norway for driving EVs. What were those?
Yeah, one of the best, and there's an old story about how the Chevrolet Volt was a relatively slow seller until it finally was finally able to drive in the carpool lanes in California, and sales literally went up by 25% the next year. And in Norway, EVs are allowed to drive in the bus lanes, which is a huge incentive. And
Yes, it's like our hub lanes. Yes.
Apparently, unfortunately, that's a temporary incentive, and they're going to have to roll that back soon because there are so many EVs now taking advantage of that wonderful perk.
Any other little perks?
They don't pay certain taxes, registration fees, and things like that, so that works in the favor of the user.
I also read that applying for these incentives is very simple. All you have to do is buy the EV and you automatically get these. So there's not all this paperwork that you have to do. And also, I heard that in some cities you get free parking, which parking in Europe can be pretty expensive.
Yeah, and to your point about the complication of getting the incentive when you purchase, it's very complicated in the US right now. Dealers have to apply for it, and there's all sorts of things. So even though it's immediate, it's not really immediate. It got better here in the US. You no longer have to wait till tax day to realize your incentive, but it's still complicated.
Isn't that an amazing concept? User-friendly government?
Yes, it is.
Well, Tom, are there any political or consumer opposition to this, to the government's EV policy? I didn't see anything directly. Did you find anything out there?
Not directly. It isn't, it's definitely not a partisan issue. It isn't like this part of the government versus that part of the government. There seems to be some practical concerns, elements of going completely EV, and it does seem like the nation is working to get its charging network, not its charging, its electrical grid up to speed. They've added so many vehicles so quickly that I wouldn't say that it's buckling, but they have to do some updates. And we have to do those here too. It's not crazy, but they realize that.
Well, we touched it on this on the intro that renewable energy is the big producer, hydro and wind. So it really already starts with very low emissions, and all these electric cars helped increase or decrease the amount of emissions. I can tell you when I was out there, your lungs almost hurt because the air is so fresh out there, and it's hard to put a price on that, but the quality of life has a real value. So I wanted to talk about Norway's charging infrastructure because this is a key point to having a good EV policy. The three things I wanted to touch on was multifamily, how they got an extensive network in rugged remote terrain, and there's a significant portion of Norway that's at or in the Arctic Circle with temperatures at minus 40, minus 50 below. So let's touch on that. What in general, what are your impressions of Norway's charging infrastructure?
It seems solid. And one of the interesting things is there is apparently sufficient level three or fast charging. And it seems like most people are able to charge at home. But for people who can't charge at home, and this isn't discussed as much as it probably should be, but it's evident if you watch a video of the streets of Norway, and that there is public level two charging, which is the equivalent of home charging in front of multi-family dwellings. They're just on the street, and there's video of people using their credit cards. So it's for pay, but it's wonderful because people who have an apartment can charge overnight. And the thing about city dwellers and charging a battery fully on level two is they're only going to need to do that once a week or so. So the infrastructure doesn't, it doesn't need to be one charger per person or one charger per vehicle. Level two can be probably one per five, six, eight people because you don't need it that often.
What about getting charging infrastructure in these remote terrains, these fjords, these mountain peaks, coastal areas?
That's more difficult. And we recently had a conversation on the Car Stuff podcast with one of the directors at CRE, which is or CBRE, which is a real estate investment company that is investing in charging station locations. And even here in the US, when they're trying to locate something near the interstate, it's complicated because there are places where they can't get sufficient energy for 400 volt charging. So that gets more complicated and it gets remote. And it's clear from some of the information I have about Norway that some people have some issues, some range anxiety about going north, as it were.
Well, the last one's temperature. We did a whole story in a show together on how there was an incident here in Chicago where it got to 40 below and a lot of cars had problems charging. As I mentioned, part of Norway is in the Arctic Circle and it's very cold there. Even the southern part of Norway is in northern Europe, about the same latitude as Canada. So, how do they deal with these cold weathers and not have charging problems?
I get the sense that the ownership base, the people who drive electric vehicles in Norway, understand their vehicles a little bit better. They seem to accept the fact that you're going to lose a quarter of your range when it gets very cold. And that if you charge the vehicle or keep it on a charger, you can keep the battery preconditioned and that you need to precondition to charge. Because again, what happened here in Chicago was not the fault of the chargers. It was really a condition of the vehicle and owners allowing the vehicles to be in that condition. And I think that just a better educated driving base is going to have an easier time in cold weather.
And as you've mentioned, they live in the cold. They're used to the cold. They know you have to take proper precautions when you're going out in the cold. So, good point. Well, this is always a hard thing to deal with when you write policy, and that's the unintended consequences. What are the unintended consequences of having so many EVs and having such a successful program?
Yeah, it seems like it's almost too successful. And a lot of these wonderful things that EV owners are currently enjoying in the form of incentives are going to be taken back at some point. One of the things that they had was the carbon tax. And now that they're selling 80% of new vehicles are now EV, there's no carbon tax in those vehicles. So obviously the government needs to reclaim that revenue from someplace. And that someplace is going to be some sort of rollback of the current incentives, unfortunately for people. Additionally, we talked about how the bus lanes are now becoming crowded. And something I just learned very interestingly is that Norway has made EVs so attractive that car sales are booming in the nation. And they are at all-time highs for the last 2 years. Normally, sales pre-COVID would run about 150,000 units a year. They've been running about 175,000. So people clearly are entering that market that were not going to be there otherwise.
And I read that public transportation use has gone way down. There's less bus and train riders because people are riding their cars and it's more convenient. They've got the ability to drive in the bus lanes, free parking, and cheaper transportation. And as you mentioned, there's many more cars on the road. So I guess it's a great successful program, but there's going to have to be some tweaks. So
Yeah,
one
and that,
thing.
oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, yeah, the same incentives that were there to lure people into the EV market are now going to be removed from that. And EVs are just going to be normal and less incentivized moving forward.
Well, when programs normalize, that's always a good sign. That means they're working. I couldn't find much information on this, but it's something that gets me very upset. So often we think about waste and disposal when it's too late. Europe, has been better at this, and I think BMW was the first car to actually come apart at the end of its life cycle. What happens at the end of an EV life cycle? Has Norway made any provisions for recycling the car and recycling the battery?
I suspect that it won't be Norway specific when they start to disassemble vehicles. You mentioned BMW, and BMW famously now stamps all its plastic parts with the type of plastic that they are, making for very complete recycling. So they're to be applauded for that. But eventually, the EU, in a broader sense, is going to have to start taking battery recycling seriously, and I suspect they will. The EU is generally greener than the US in this regard, but there's also economic incentive to do so. The components of a battery are very expensive, so it makes sense that people are going to want to reclaim those.
Yeah, so that's something we'll keep an eye on both in Europe and the US. Well, even a great program doesn't work 100%. What areas did you find out require improvement in the program?
Yeah, it looks like they need to improve their electrical infrastructure. It looks like that there are still people living in Norway who are worried about traveling, quote unquote, north to where it's more remote and where it's colder. And those are things that probably needed to be fixed. But they still have. It's not as bipartisan an issue. It's not bipartisan at all. It's not as a partisan issue in Norway, but they still have their detractors.
What about the standardization of the charging ports and the standardization of payment? I heard that that is very complicated.
Yeah, they have one of the interesting things about Norway and the success of EVs there is that Tesla moved in very quickly when it saw that Tesla could take a significant market share in that market and take advantage of the incentives. So you've got Tesla with its own charging standard. And then Europe seems to like CCS, which is what most American charging standards are, but they have a lot of the Japanese Asian style CHAdeMO chargers too. And that's a little bit confusing for people because you can't have a charging station generally with three different charging cables. So there's adapters and it gets confusing. You need to know where you're going. So you need the apps to work. And I doubt that they're that well integrated over there because you have so many different networks.
Well, let's sum this up. Norway is a wealthy country. It has a very rugged terrain. They have a large landmass with a small homogeneous population. I think 80% of people that live in Norway are Norwegian. And the US is a large geographic area. It's a very diverse country, and it's a melting pot of nationalities. And we're very politically divided, and we're heavily in debt. So I don't know that you could have two countries being less similar. So in your opinion, I don't know if there's any comparisons you could draw, and are there any takeaways that the US can consider implementing here in our EV program, even though there's so many differences between Norway and the US?
Yeah, a couple of good things happening here in the US right now, and that's that manufacturers have started to take responsibility for charging. So we have this new charging network called IONNA, which is a group of manufacturers. They're not in it for their money. They're in it to support EV sales. And that might work very well. The other thing, too, I think, is our incentive infrastructure right now, which is based on the federal tax credit, is confusing and keeps changing. Now there are Tesla models that don't apply. Certain Ford F-150 Lightning pickup trucks don't. And it's all very confusing. And it seems like even dealers aren't entirely in on this. But what happened to this incentive, which was substantial, $7,500 at its maximum, it became a political football. And it was used, it was changed from a consumer incentive to a manufacturing and industry incentive. And it's really more there now to lure the manufacturer of batteries to the US than to get individuals to buy an EV. And that's very confusing. And I think that consumers who would consider an EV maybe think like they're going to wait till this kind of the smoke settles on this.
That's very interesting. And that's always been a problem with government incentives. When they're not consistent in long term, it's hard for people to plan because things are constantly changing. Some of the things that I saw was that having a balance and a gradual transition to EV mobility was key, not doing this too fast, that charging infrastructure really needs to go first, where I think the US has been a bit backwards. We made sales and then started to build the infrastructure. And also the standardization of it, as you've mentioned, I think is fantastic. The availability is something to look at. And I think the big one is these EVs have to be economical. They can't just be for the upper class and more wealthy people. They have to be for everyone. I don't know how government does that. Incentives are part of it, but the manufacturers also have to lower cost of production and lower cost of sales.
Yeah, and an interesting concern there too. Post-COVID, we saw that manufacturers learned that they could make more money by selling fewer vehicles. And the downside of that is there may be less incentive on the part of manufacturers to make affordable vehicles, because that's what we lost. We lost vehicles at the bottom end of that. And there isn't massive incentive. There's some incentive for manufacturers to be building more affordable EVs. And we're going to see them, but I don't think they're going to be quite as affordable as everyone wants. This Tesla Model 2 that's going rumored to come in at 25 grand will never come in at 25 grand.
Right.
It'll come in at 35 at first, and there'll be a cheap version that's 32 or something like that. But these things never quite end up being as inexpensive as they could be, and that will slow adoption.
But I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, you're going to see some revolutionary battery technology that will lower the cost because a big part of the car is the battery. And there's a lot of work out on that. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that to see what happens. Tom, bottom line. Is Norway an anomaly and an outlier, or do they do things right that can help other countries make this transition?
I think it's a case study in an environment that was perfect for this to happen in, but I think that everything that happened there is something we can learn from. I think the incentives were right, and I think public adoption. And also, if you the leaders, the Norwegian leaders, the people in the government seem very excited about this, and they seem excited for the right reasons. It's less about it being populist and more about it being the right thing to do. And I think that that kind of attitude is actually contagious. And it seemed like the general public in Norway has adopted that attitude too. They think it's a good idea.
Tom, that's an excellent point. I think it's a nice thing to close on. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. I think the Norwegian situation is a fabulous thing for people to check out.
Well, this is our first case study. I really enjoyed doing it with you. And
Thank you.
thank you
Me
so
too.
much for being on the show and providing this update.
Always an honor. Thank you.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and the host of Car Stuff Podcast. With our Green Automotive News Update, I'm Robert Colangelo. Thank you for listening to Green Sense and check out the Green Sense Minute every Thursday and Saturday on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
The Green Sense Show is brought to you by CEA Technology, a leader in building indoor growing systems that allow you to grow pesticide-free and conserve fertilizer, water, and energy to grow crops sustainably. Visit ceatechn.com to learn more.